Welcome to the Common Sense Spirituality Show, the show that takes the mystery out of spirituality with your host, David Gagan, engineer, science director, scholarly researcher of life's mysteries, and author of The Endless Journey.
I'm Dave Gagan, host of the Common Sense Spirituality Show. I'd like to welcome you to today's show titled Near-Death Experiences. We're going to talk about a subject that is making atheists very uncomfortable, near-death experiences. Today we have a very special guest with us. Dr. Jeffrey Long is a physician and radiation oncologist and the founder of the Near-Death Experience Research Foundation. Over 10 years of research went into Dr. Long's study of over 1,300 near-death experiences, which is presented in his book, Evidence of the Afterlife, The Science of Near-Death Experience, which was a New York Times bestseller. This is by far the largest scientific study of near-death experiences ever presented. I'd like to welcome Dr. Jeffrey Long.
Well, thank you, David. It's a pleasure to be here.
It's great to have you. This is, I'll tell you, near-death experiences have boggled my mind for a number of years, and it's wonderful to have a guy who's spent so much time looking into them, and from what I can tell, really getting your hand around them.
Oh, yeah. I'll tell you what, David, even after over 15 years of studying more near-death experiencers than any other researcher in the world, I can assure you near-death experiences still boggle my mind. So listen on as the show goes on, and you'll find out all about why.
This sounds good. Okay, well, let's start out basic. What is a near-death experience?
Well, sure. For my research purposes, and what most researchers believe, is that near-death experiences are composed of two parts. You're near death. In other words, you're so physically compromised that you're unconscious and may even be clinically dead. And at this time that you're unconscious, even by the dictionary definition, you should have no conscious memory at this time. So literally teetering on the brink of life in a near-death episode, you have the experience part of a near-death experience. Now, while no two near-death experiences are the same, if you study many, and I've studied thousands at this point, you see a pattern of elements that's seen consistently, not only in my research, but in the research of all other near-death experiencers. That's the experience component.
Okay. Now you have identified 9 lines of evidence in your book, Evidence of the Afterlife, which are consistent with most NDEs. So let me go through them one at a time, and I'll list them so you don't have to remember them all. And then if you would comment on them and talk a little bit about each one of them. Let's start out with crystal clear consciousness. What do you mean by that?
Well, sure, David. As we said, at the time of a near-death experience, at that close brush with death, they're unconscious. And yet, at that time, they have typically crystal clear consciousness when it should be physically impossible. And in fact, to realize how remarkable this is, David, understand that a common cause of near-death experiences is cardiac arrest, known as a heart attack. Now, when the heart stops beating, of course, immediately blood stops flowing to the brain. 10 to 20 seconds after the blood stops flowing to the brain, measurements of brain electrical activity done by the EEG or electroencephalogram are absolutely flat. There should be absolutely no, even theoretically possible, conscious lucid experience at that time. And yet, this is where we have near-death experiencers by the hundreds that are having cardiac arrest, that are over their body observing often their own frantic resuscitation efforts with crystal clear consciousness. And that's medically inexplicable.
Yeah, that's amazing. Number 2, realistic out-of-body experiences. Talk to us about that.
Well, sure. As we said, often when the time there's a cardiac arrest, they are looking at their own frantic resuscitation efforts. That's called the out-of-body experience. About 40% of people that have near-death experiences will see ongoing earthly events, typically from a point of vantage above their physical body. They can see other things going on nearby, far away. And when I say realistic, I mean literally, again, by the hundreds and hundreds of people that have described these experiences. I've done studies looking for any unrealistic or hallucinatory content in what they're observing, and I pay very close attention to what the people sharing these experiences say. Did they later check out their observations? Did they see what they saw from the rooftop that they could not possibly have seen before? We've had people with near-death experiences where they had out-of-body experiences that coded in the operating room, for example, and yet vividly saw and heard conversations going on, for example, in the hospital cafeteria with their friends and family waiting. So not only are they observing earthly events around their body, but often scores of experience talk about observing geographically distant events, far from their physical body and far from any sensory awareness. And remarkably, over 98% of the time, what they're describing is accurate down to the finest details. It's information they could not possibly have known unless they were actually there in that out-of-body experience.
And this is amazing. Heightened senses.
Well, sure. We've had, and this is one of the things that I'm trying to get to when I talk about heightened senses is, for example, people may see more clearly, may hear more clearly. I interviewed a lady named Vicky who had a very typical near-death experience, but with one very atypical component. Vicky was born totally blind. To her, and remained blind throughout her life until her near-death experience as a result of a severe auto accident at about age 22. Now, to people born totally blind, vision is unknown and unknowable. It cannot be described in terms of the remaining four senses. I've tried, others have tried, you can't explain it. And yet Vicky, for the first time in her life, was hovering near death, unconscious, and saw herself from that out-of-body experience perspective we just saw, with her consciousness above her physical body in the emergency room laying on a gurney. She was horrified because sight was so unfamiliar to her, and it was only after she correlated her long hair that she only knew for that prior time in her life by the sense of touch. And interestingly, she knew but from touch a ring that her father had given her on her finger, but now all of a sudden she could see and realized that that was her down below herself. She went on to have a stunningly detailed and highly visual near-death experience, heightened senses of vision which should have been absolutely impossible for someone born totally blind.
That's amazing. I assume when she came back, she was still blind.
Oh, absolutely. That was, in fact, it was interesting. She, Vicky, as many people that have near-death experiences, knew vision in terms of being able to see in front of them, behind of them, right, left, up and down. It's referred to by many as 360-degree vision, but that's a two-dimensional term. They're actually seeing, if you will, spherically in all directions simultaneously and understanding and processing it. And what's funny about Vicky, as I kept trying to explain to her as I interviewed, that the rest of us in the world had what's called pie-shaped visual fields. Our eyes are in the bony sockets, and we can only see so far left, right, and up and down. And I think to this day, Vicky doesn't really hardly believe me, because her entire life experience is with vision very different from what we know it.
So you get spherical, basically, vision.
Yeah, front, down, right, left. I mean, absolutely.
Unbelievable.
Something that, and a good example is listeners hear about this as we go on. Certainly, these are dramatic accounts, but you can see how nobody could possibly construct having an experience like this. Dreams or hallucinations aren't like this. All that you're going to hear about the near-death experience today is a class of consciousness that absolutely does not exist medically under any other circumstances. And I should know, I'm a physician.
Yeah, exactly. Consciousness during anesthesia.
Yeah, I got very interested medically in whether people could have near-death experiences and typical near-death experiences while they were under general anesthesia. Now, under that blanket of sleep, of course it should be impossible to have a conscious experience. And in fact, I mean, I've been in the operating room many, many times. You're more than just unconscious under general anesthesia. You're literally comatose. You don't even have brainstem function. And that's fact why they have to breathe for you with special machines or with a bag, because you're shut down all the way to the brainstem level under general anesthesia. I've now received scores of near-death experiences that occurred while under general anesthesia, and I was able to compare their responses to survey questions to people that had near-death experiences under all other circumstances, not under anesthesia. And astoundingly, the survey response questions are absolutely the same, and a key question is, what was your level of consciousness and alertness during the experience? And even under that blanket of sleep under anesthesia, if they have a near-death experience at that time, their level of consciousness and alertness was absolutely the same as near-death experiences occurring under all other circumstances. And just that one line of evidence right there, Dave, and is pretty much sufficient to refute any possibility that near-death experiences are due to any brain function whatsoever as we understand brain function.
Yeah, I agree with that. Perfect playback. Tell me about that.
That's an interesting part of near-death experiences. About 15% have what's called life reviews, and that involves them seeing a portion or even all of their prior life while they're having a near-death experience. These are often dramatic. Sometimes I have to pinch myself to remind me that they may be unconscious or clinically dead for a few minutes, and yet here they are reviewing their prior life years to decades. Now, as a researcher, I ask myself the question, is what they're seeing in a near-death experience real, or is it not real? Is it hallucinatory? And for those that investigated what they saw during their near-death experience, typically during toddler era, typically at times that they'd long forgotten about it because what they saw during their near-death experience happened so far early in their life when they were so young, even those that go back and investigate it, typically asking their parents, find out that even though they had forgotten about it, what they saw during their life review really happened and happened exactly as they saw it. So life reviews are dramatic and very transformative. David, you can imagine what people think when they see all their prior life. The good, the bad, really helps them to understand living their life after their near-death experience, just how much each and every one of our little actions can affect so many people.
Yeah, that's amazing. Question off a little bit: Do we ever see previous lives in these things, or are they pretty much focused on the life that they're in that right now?
That is a great question. We have a pretty good sized series of people who became aware of prior earthly lives. Now, this is interesting. Were they aware of their own life? Were they aware of someone else's life? Most of them that describe details say this was them, their personality of their current earthly life, but decades and often centuries previously. And what fascinates me is about these prior life remembrances is, I mean, you and I, and I think everyone would say, if they talked about being Cleopatra or talked about being some famous historical figure, and I've never seen that. These are people that live just the humdrum drudgery, often, frankly, fairly ugly and difficult lives of many years to centuries ago. In fact, one past life remembrance described life in a medieval city. And folks, if you think it's anything like the Disney castles with spires and the knights riding around in armor, let me describe for you what was described to me in their past life memory. It was walled in. It was incredibly cramped. As really happened, they build their homes right up to the edge of the wall. That was the only place that was safe. The streets were dirty. It stunk fiercely. They had very poor, let's shall we say, sewage control back in that era. There'd be all sorts of sick or ill or otherwise people, and it was what many people would consider today to be a horrific realm. This is nothing at all like the mythical medieval life, but what they described is the way it really was all those centuries ago.
Not Camelot at all.
Oh, not Camelot at all. I mean, it was a very difficult, to put it mildly, life expectancy. It was, life then was short and difficult. And for the people that describe these life reviews of many centuries ago from prior lives, that's typically what they're describing. It's nothing like the fantasy or story tale books. It's real life. It's gripping, seeming observations of the lives that our ancestors lived all that time ago.
Yeah, interesting. Family reunions.
That I love. Very often people will see deceased loved ones that they knew on Earth. And even if their life was difficult with these people in their earthly life, these are joyous reunions. There's a great deal of communication back and forth. And even if they encounter someone who they didn't know was dead, if they check it out, they'll often find that they really were dead. In fact, we have literally dozens and dozens of near-death experiences where they encounter somebody who they know is familiar, who knows them, and they don't know who they are. They can't recall them from their life. And it's only after they recover from what nearly killed them and later in their life are going through old family album books that there it is. that great-great-grandfather, that great-uncle, even if that person died before they were born, they can recognize them as being the individual they encountered in the near-death experience that had that striking familiarity. And my researcher instinct was to explore this further. Any other form of altered consciousness, dreams, hallucinations, anything like that, if you encounter somebody, it's almost certainly going to be the banker you did business with that day, the person you said hi to on the street, the family member you hollered out to as you headed up to bed that day. And yet, with near-death experiences, about 98% of the time, if they encounter beings that they knew during their earthly life, these beings are deceased. And that makes sense if you understand the totality of the logic of near-death experiences. But again, just one more significant line of evidence. And I might add, too, deceased pets are very often described in near-death experiences. And like with deceased people, even if they died of crippling, debilitating, disfiguring illnesses, for humans as well as pets encountered in near-death experiences, they are always picture perfect health. Gripping stories even of people that had amputations all their life. When they're encountered in near-death experiences, they're complete.
That's fascinating. The pets. What's the pet? And the pet, I assume, looks like the pet did before. Is there a different way of communicating with the pet? Is the pet just a less developed being, or you blow me away here. Tell me about the pets.
Sure. The pets in general are picture perfect health. The pets, like humans encountered, if they were very old and debilitated, may appear years to even, in the case of humans, decades younger, which is interesting, and that's not at all unusual. The pets, there's no communication like what we're having. There's no human-to-human communication typically, although there are rare instances where there seems to be that. It seems to be a sort of return to the greatest moments of their earthly life where the pet was enjoying their human and the human enjoying their pet. So that's typically in dogs, cats, birds, horses, I mean, you name it. If pretty much if you have a pet that you've loved in this life, they seem that they're going to be existing in the afterlife.
Amazing. Children's experiences.
Well, sure. My study was children age 5 and younger. In fact, the median and average age of this study group was 3.5 years old, and we had about 23 that were in this group. My question was, how does their near-death experiences compare to those of older children and adults? And I compared 33 elements of near-death experiences in my very detailed survey and compared the two groups. Here's what I was thinking. For these very young children, culturally, they're practically a blank slate. They almost certainly don't know what death is and wouldn't understand it even if you tried to explain it to them. I mean, think, average of 3.5 years old. And of course, David, they almost certainly have never heard about near-death experiences or wouldn't understand them. So how do these near-death experiences occur? I mean, if near-death experiences are influenced by cultural beliefs, religious beliefs, say anything that you acquire through life, surely these near-death experiences in these very young children should be different. And to my abject surprise, there was no difference in the 33 elements of the near-death experience I studied. Absolutely no statistical difference between the two groups. Here were these children, remarkably young, having same, strikingly similar experiences as older children and adults. Absolutely no reason to believe that religious training, cultural beliefs, things that you acquire as you grow up in life, modify in any way what happens during a near-death experience.
Yeah, that's amazing. Worldwide consistency.
The portions of the website we have, nderf.org, have been translated into over 20 different languages. So we literally have a world outreach that is absolutely unique in any prior study of near-death experiences in history. Huge thanks to our webmaster, Jody, who's heroically taken that on. But now as a result, we've received about 500 so far non-English near-death experiences. And after carefully studying them, we have, by the way, we translate non-English near-death experiences into English using volunteer translators. We don't use the internet-based translation engines are just not accurate enough, especially for these profound and deep experiences that people often have during near-death experiences. So what we found with a huge number of near-death experiences from all around the world is that, once again, they are strikingly consistent. And even we looked at dozens of people that had near-death experiences in non-Western countries. And again, remarkably, even in these culturally markedly different environments, way, way different from what we know living in the United States, their near-death experiences, again, strikingly similar to near-death experiences that occur in the United States and anywhere else around the world. David, I was left with a conclusion that remarkably, it makes no difference whether you're a Muslim in Egypt or a Hindu in India or a Christian in the United States. Anytime, any place in the world that a near-death experience occurs, their experience will be strikingly similar.
Yeah, that's amazing. Last one, after effects.
Sure. As you can imagine, having an experience like a near-death experience is profound, and the impact on a person having one can be enormous and lifelong. This has been very well studied by many, many researchers, and we're all seeing the same thing. After people have a near-death experience, there's a typical change in values. And now these changes may occur over many years. Even after an amazing life-shaking experience like a near-death experience, they're humans, like all of us, and change, especially big change, is difficult. But over, and typically it takes an average of 7 years for people to fully integrate their near-death experience and go through most of the changes, we see a consistent change in their values and their beliefs. Of course, David, they almost all have no fear of death. That's obvious. They face death. They know what happens when they die, and they know that there's a wonderful afterlife that awaits them. So, of course, they have an increased belief in life after death for the same reason. They've been there, saw it, and know its reality from firsthand experience. They become typically less materialistic. If they're in that job trying to sell used cars and hustle people, they may have to change jobs, you know, to fulfill their recent, they're changed in values after a near-death experience. Very often, near-death experiences go into the helping professions, social work, healthcare, etc. There's a decreased desire for monetary wealth, increased desire to learn about spirituality and grow with that, and they often describe a lifelong experience of learning after their near-death experience, taking courage from their experience, having that interest in reaching out and learning more. And over time, these are typically very, very changed individuals. And I might add, I think what most people would say, changed for the better. They overwhelmingly greatly increase the value of loving relationships. They know how the importance of love, typically from their near-death experience. They will often leave unloving relationships and go throughout the rest of their life aware of how important love is in their from their near-death experience, and hopefully do their best to share that with all the rest of us in the world throughout the rest of their life.
Do most people think that this was an accident? Or do they think that they were really meant to have this experience so that they could change something in their life?
That's a real good question. As best I can tell, nobody really seems to think that they were fated or destined to have a near-death experience. As best we can tell, the experience just happened. Now, to directly answer your question in a rather dramatic way, we have one near-death experience who was in the afterlife and encountered a being that they believed was God. And they were having an overwhelmingly, typically blissful, positive, joy off the scale beyond anything in their earthly life, profound sense of being home and love, typical, if you will, of right. People that have deeper near-death experiences. But while in that environment, they asked that being, why me? Why was this allowed to happen to me? Just as you can imagine, just in bliss about this amazing experience. The response she got, I think, is extremely telling. And the response she got was, love falls on all of us equally. This experience you needed to live your earthly life. And that literally, that one near-death experience, interestingly, has changed the opinion of a number of near-death experiencers, researchers. You know, we're no longer looking at biological causes of near-death experiences. That helps us to understand that near-death experiences are important for the people that have them because that seems to be important for them to live their earthly life. Some people apparently, for whatever reason, and we don't understand the bigger picture of how things work, certainly, but apparently some people need to have them or it's more important, and for others, it's important perhaps that they don't have them. So again, it seems to add a layer of mystery on that seeming explanation, and yet that seems to be the reason some people have near-death experiences when they nearly die, and some people don't.
Yeah. You explained that there's no two NDEs, near-death experiences, that are identical, but you have certain patterns. Let me go through some of these patterns and have you comment on them as I go through them.
Okay.
The first one, passing into and through a dark tunnel.
Yeah, that's true. The tunnel is very often, after that initial out-of-body experience, that's often the next element of the near-death experience that occurs. The tunnel, by all means, isn't always dark. In fact, it often isn't dark. It may be very bright. The tunnel is quite variably described. It may be small, large. People never have a sense of claustrophobia in it, however. And they're typically moving at very, very high speeds, seemingly beyond any speed that would be possible on Earth. One of the more common things about the tunnel experience is at the end of the tunnel, very often they describe a mystical, beautiful, unearthly light, which seems to be their destination at the end of the tunnel.
The light is like, it would like be what we'd see outside on a day, but I mean different, but it encompasses everything. It's not like a light bulb somewhere.
Yes.
It's like the environment.
It's not like a light bulb. It's not like the light we would see outside. Just to show you some of the descriptors that some near-death experiences have shared that helps people understand how different this is from light we're accustomed to in our earthly everyday life, they may say that the light is brilliant, like a million times a million suns, and yet never hurts the eyes or is difficult or uncomfortable to be in the presence with. The light is often described as being a being, a presence. There's maybe a description of overwhelming sense of love associated with the light. So the light may either seem to have a personality, or it may just simply be an unearthly light, or it may be associated with an unearthly presence.
Okay. Hearing distinctive sounds.
Very good. The people have a near-death experience, and this is when they're in typically unearthly realms, or in a realm nothing like what they've known during their earthly life, they may hear music, and this is often described music that is far more beautiful than anything that they've heard on Earth. And it's interesting how they describe that. It seems to be complex. Beautiful doesn't even seem to be an apt word. Sometimes they've tried to record it, or at least one talented near-death experiencer tried in some small way to reproduce the music they'd heard during the near-death experience. And even while they created some remarkably beautiful music, they would emphasize that it doesn't even come close to the majesty and the wonder and the beauty of the music that they heard in the afterlife realm during their near-death experience.
Amazing. Experiencing intensely powerful emotions. Tell us about that.
And absolutely. I've alluded to the fact how people feel so overwhelmingly at peace and at love. In fact, the top two words, descriptors of these unearthly realms, often called heavenly realms, that we get from people that have had a near-death experience is, number one, peace, and number two, love, although the two are very close. Love may be number one. But they feel love and peace that is beyond anything they've ever known in their earth. Words fall all out of their communications on this as they try to convey just how different this is from anything they've ever known or could have known during their earthly life. And very often what they feel is a sense, when they're in these heavenly realms, that this is their real home. And they feel that very, very strongly. And even though they've lived their life for years, typically for decades, and all that they knew up until that which nearly killed them was their earthly experiences, once they're in that unearthly or heavenly realm, they have a powerful sense that this is where they really belong. This is where they came from. This is where they want to return. And they very, very strongly sense they don't want to leave that place.
Now there's, you mentioned somewhere along the line that there was a small percentage that find the experience frightening.
Sure.
What's that all about?
Sure. There's actually a modest percentage that have some component of feeling frightened. For some people, like the out-of-body experience, we talked about the blind from birth lady, Vicky, earlier. She was frightened when she first had her first in her life experience of vision. She was horrified just because vision was so unfamiliar. Now, for other people that have near-death experiences, they're horrified at being apart from their body, or it just takes them a while to settle down and adapt to having a near-death experience. It's the sense of fright is typically more early on in the experience. Now, there's an extremely small, like 1%, that are truly objectively frightening, i.e., in hellish and truly objectively frightening realms. These seem to be part of near-death experiences. They're very mysterious, and I think the reason why these occur, as we said earlier, it's what they need for the earthly life. Remarkably, even the people that face the most dark and dangerous and frightening and hellish even parts of a near-death experience, very typically, years later, after they've grown and learned from their experience, will say that there were some things that they needed to learn to face in their own life, that that was probably the only way that they were going to be able to confront the issues in their life that needed to be changed. It was probably the only way they were going to spend their life, rest of their life, as better people, is to be, go through a very, very frightening experience.
Kind of like a cold slap in the face.
Oh, a cold slap in the face times a million.
Yeah, right.
That's true.
Okay. Seeing or visiting beautiful locations. Tell me about that.
Oh, we've started to talk about that. And you know, David, that's one of my favorite things to talk about. When they're in these unearthly, and I think they're aptly called heavenly realms, the descriptions are just mind-boggling. There are landscapes that are beautiful beyond anything on Earth. These aren't rare. I've got hundreds of these descriptions. Very often they say that these landscapes have colors that are so beautiful that these colors literally do not exist and have no correlate here on Earth. I mean, it's beauty times a million beyond anything we could possibly know in our earthly life. There are mountains, sky, plants, flowers, beauty. There may be buildings there, typically majestic buildings, beautiful, pristine buildings. They often describe libraries in these buildings, enormously majestic, other beings there, all of this associated with a profound sense of peace and love. Often they're interacting with other people. They may have someone seeming to guide them through the experience, but they're, you know, the streets, cities, all that they see, all of the environment that they're in these heavenly realms is completely off the scale of anything that we could know in our earthly life in terms of its beauty and in terms of this profound sense of peace, love, and a sense of being home that they feel with this.
Yeah. Now, I tell you, this is absolutely fascinating. How about a sense of knowing the universal order? What's their purpose? Do they feel that?
Sure. Very often when they're in, typically in these unearthly realms, they have a sense of what's been referred to as universal knowledge. They get it. They know it. Even if they were not at all bright in their earthly life, when they're in this realm of greatly accelerated consciousness and understanding, they are aware that they know things about art, music, science, basically facts, math, things that are absolutely off their scale. They could not possibly have known that in their earthly life, and they're aware that they've tapped into truly universal knowledge. I mean, they have knowledge and wisdom that far exceeds what they ever believed they could possibly have. Now, when they return to Earth, they're typically unable to retain essentially any of it. In fact, that always puzzled me until one near-death experiencer put it in a way that I could understand. They said it was like trying to put an ocean of this universal knowledge into the thimble that is our human brain. It just doesn't work. And so I understand that. It's knowledge that we literally can't assimilate with our earthly limitation and brains as we know it. But above and beyond that, your question also alluded, well, what about, do they get a sense of earthly life and purpose? Oh, you better believe they do. They come back over and, oh, if I had a nickel for every near-death experiencer that told me this, remarkably consistently, they come back knowing, first and foremost, our earthly life here, yes, is difficult. We know that. The other side knows that. But it is important. It's meaningful and purposeful no matter how much drudgery and difficulty we go through. It's all okay in the end. Meaning and purpose, you want to put it in one word, it would be love. that's straight from the near-death experiencers. That seems to be perhaps the most important thing to bring back in our earthly life. Other near-death experiencers less often talk about knowledge, the importance of relationships, including especially family relationships, seems to be key, and basically just learning lessons or having experiences here in our earthly life that are unique, and because of the realm we're in here on our earthly life, simply cannot be reproduced in the afterlife, where there is no fear, misery, drudgery, where there is no anger, resentment, all those things that make earthly life so difficult are gone in the afterlife.
So when they speak of love, are they saying that we're trying to learn about love? We're trying to, that's our goal in life, is to learn how to love. I mean, what are they saying about love?
Yeah, that's one of the most important goals. That's probably the most important goal. Now, there's other certainly things that make earthly life important and significant, but one of the most important things is to learn how to love, and that seems to be love of self, taking care of oneself, doing the right thing, keeping yourself healthy, and very importantly, loving other people, as in compassionate outreach, as in showing them, helping them out, as in being there for them, as in everything that real love possibly entails. That seems to be the most important lesson or thing that we ought to be thinking about as people in our earthly life.
Okay, so I break love usually into three things. You got the self-love, you got the personal love, your family and friends, and then you have the impersonal love. And what you're saying is those three things are the things that we need to be developing. And I guess you start out self-love. If you can't love yourself, it's hard to really appreciate others. And then you work your way up to expand your feeling of love. Is that how you see it?
Yeah, I like that, David. There's no question about that. And love is a simple word that portrays an extremely complex set of feelings, actions, attitudes, values. And I think love is sort of, it's the word that you think about, but that's part of our earthly venture, it seems to be, is to learn about love, grow in love, and manifest love to the, as we understand it, throughout our life as best we can.
Yeah, fascinating. Awareness of future life events.
Yes. We occasionally have people that seem to have awareness of future earthly events and even far future events. Many of these near-death experiencers that describe this are aware that the future is not fixed. In other words, the choices that we make today can and absolutely do affect what can occur and what will occur in the future. Just as an example of this, as we talked about how near-death experiencers in those heavenly realms didn't want to leave. That was their home. They knew it. Everything that was miserable about Earth was gone. They felt that peace, love, connection. They really felt they were home. And so sometimes when they're in these heavenly realms having a near-death experience and they're told they need to return to their earthly life, even though their earthly life was the only thing familiar to them up to that point, they are adamant. The great majority of near-death experiencers do not want to return to their friends, family, or loved ones, but want to stay in those heavenly realms. There's often some fascinating dialogues with other beings around them in these realms that oft tries to persuade them to go back to their earthly life. And you can imagine how dramatic those discussions would be.
Especially when you're near death in your regular life.
Oh, yeah. Good God, come back to that broken body, right. They often say. But an example of a future event during those dialogues or discussions, and interestingly, I have a small series of this now, these loving, compassionate beings with the person having a near-death experience will try to help them understand what happens if they stay in that unearthly realm, if they physically, irreversibly, permanently die in their earthly life. And near-death experiencers describe being shown what happens if they make that choice and stay in that heavenly realm. And they're shown their own funeral. And they're shown their friends and their family and their loved ones. This is some of the more gripping things you read in near-death experience accounts. These are hauntingly real and vivid. We've had people, when they see their own funeral, basically a future event if they decide to stay dead, one vividly described there were a couple of two-year-old children giggling and laughing during the funeral because, David, they didn't understand death and they didn't understand that family member died. And all, of course, everybody else in the funeral is just crushed and heartbroken, and they can literally feel and understand the incredible grief that people have there. And believe me, when near-death experiencers see that, almost to the last person, they understand they cannot do that to the people they love, and grudgingly will return to their broken earthly body and struggle to recover from what nearly killed them.
Yeah, absolutely fascinating. Life review. You know, we always hear about, you know, your life flashes in front of you. What's that all about?
Yeah, sure. The concept of a life flashing in front of you is a very brief descriptor of this remarkable experience. And we talked about that a little bit earlier, but just in a little more detail. At times during near-death experiences, about 15% of the people having NDEs, or NDEs is an abbreviation for near-death experiences, they will see part or all of their prior life. And what's dramatic is for those that see all of their prior life, sometimes are what we call panoramic life reviews. A smaller percentage of life reviews include not only seeing all of their prior life, typically decades, but in addition to that, while they are seeing and being aware of their interactions with other people, they are actually in the place of the person they're interacting with. They're feeling it, they're understanding it, and they're aware of what that person felt while they were interacting with them previously in their life. And often it's a huge surprise, and you can imagine, for good or for ill, that's an amazing learning experience about, you know, how they affected people in ways that they either intentionally or unintentionally, for good or for ill, had no clue while they were living their earthly life. And, you know, again, sometimes I do have to pinch myself and realize that even though they're unconscious or clinically dead for minutes, here they are having this remarkably detailed review of their prior life, sometimes being aware of what other people felt like interacting with them. And like I said, just an example of how surprising this is. I don't like it's a cute example, but I mean, I've got dozens, but I just remember this one. This was a lady who nearly died, had a near-death experience, and was aware of herself in the bathtub at the age of 3 getting a bath. Well, her daddy came in to get her out of the bathtub, and she thought it would be great fun to jump out of the bathtub and run through the house spraying water everywhere and laughing. And that was all she remembered, was that it was fun. But during her panoramic life review, she suddenly went, uh-oh, daddy just came home from a long day of work. He was incredibly tired, incredibly emotionally drained, and daddy was having no fun with this at all. So cute but interesting little example to just show the power of these panoramic life reviews, becoming aware of information or how your life actions affected other people in a way you absolutely could not have understood when you were living your life.
It's fascinating stuff, really. Mm-hmm. Reaching a boundary. I guess that's the time when you make a decision.
It really is. Typically, there's other beings with them. These are beings that are loving, compassionate, very, very wise. They may be traveling on a, you know, down a path or something in these unearthly, beautiful realms. And I've learned as I'm reading near-death experiences, if they are going down a path and they describe coming up on a fence or a bridge, I go, aha, I know what's going to happen next. That's a boundary, and it almost always is. So before going that boundary, it can be a fence, chasm, you know, something across the road, bridges, those are the more common ones. It seems to be a natural stopping point during the near-death experience, at which time they need to decide if they're going to return to that earthly life and that broken body fighting to stay alive, or if they're going to stay in that heavenly realm of pure bliss.
Is it their choice?
It's variable. Sometimes, probably a slight majority, there is no choice. They're simply told, you're going back, and boom, end of discussion. They're returned back to their earthly life. A minority of the cases, there seems to be a choice. And there's some discussion about why they return back. And as I said, remarkably, the great majority of people do not want to return to that earthly body. And there's often some tremendous discussion about what's important, what they need to learn. Here's where you typically hear the very often quoted thing that near-death experiences hear. You have more to do. I'm not finished with you yet. You know, things like that. They basically, in general, will hear that there's much more that they need to be doing. And so often, if they are involved in making a decision, often very reluctantly, they will make that decision to return to their earthly body. And from the moment they do, it's usually very, very, they may or may not rapidly reverse through a tunnel or reverse the experience they've had. Typically, they wake up, may even wake up days later in the intensive care unit, fighting to survive what they nearly died from.
Wow, that's I tell you, that's absolutely absolutely fascinating. Changes in attitude. How does this change people? Must be huge.
Yeah, as you can imagine, I mean, if you ever had a fear of death and then you died and then you saw what happened after you die, and it's all of what I'm describing with you, how could you possibly spend the rest of your life fearing death at all? You know what lies ahead. You know it's your home. It's your deceased loved ones will be there, pets, everybody. Beauty, understanding, peace, awareness that that really is your home. So obviously, virtually all near-death experiencers have no fear of death and, in fact, are quite aware that that afterlife is going to be a vastly better realm of existence than their current earthly life. I can tell you, as a physician, I assure people with very deep understanding, even those that are about to die from cancer, which I treat and have limited life expectancy yet, now more than ever, I can reassure them that we do have life after death and a wonderful life after death. And for those who have lost a loved one to cancer, I can reassure them now more than ever that their loved one is in a much, much better place than you and I and everybody else living out our earthly lives.
Yeah. Did you ever have a near-death experience yourself?
No, I've never had a personal near-death experience. Thank goodness.
What got you involved in this?
Yeah, great question. Back when I was doing my residency training, my medical specialty is radiation oncology, the use of radiation therapy to treat cancer. I was in my residency training reading. This was decades ago, David, when we actually had books and the internet didn't exist. That's a hint as to how old I am.
I'm probably older yet. So.
Yeah, oh my. Well, anyway, you remember books. So we were at the medical library looking up an article related to cancer in one of the world's most prestigious medical journals, the Journal of the American Medical Association. So while I was flipping through this large volume looking for my article, totally by accident, or maybe not by accident, I encountered an article that had the word near-death experience in it. And I was fascinated. I'd never heard of it before. And I said, well, what's this? You're either dead. I mean, medically speaking, I knew you're either dead or you're not dead. What's this near-death and experience? So puzzled, I read the whole article and was immediately fascinated. Here were people having these experiences all around the world, very, very similar, at a time they were unconscious, that they'd appeared by all clinical measures to be dead, and yet here they were describing consistently these experiences. So I was absolutely blown away. In fact, I stopped and read some references, and I remember thinking prophetically, why is there not more research on this fascinating topic? And so I kind of bookmarked that, hustled about my finding my article and continued to finish my studies. And it was, but never forgot that. Never let go of my fascination with the fact that there may be something much, much more in the universe and earth and earthly lives than I was aware of. And maybe this was a hint as to what goes on. So many, many years later, I'm a bit of a computer geek and back with some very primitive software we had back in the late 1990s, I was able to develop a website devoted to near-death experience, put up a survey questionnaire, and decided that I was going to learn, if you will, I was a skeptic at that point in time, and I wasn't going to believe what other articles said, what other books said. I was going to learn about near-death experiences in the most reliable way that I could, and that's from people that had near-death experiences that shared them with me directly and filled out my questionnaire on the website. So that went up on August 1998. Several months later, I actually figured out how to download in the primitive modem-driven software and computer connections we had back then. Got my first batch of experiences shared on that questionnaire, read them, and went, wow, I get it. Near-death experiences are for real. And I believe now that I've studied, since my book's come out, we now have, remarkably, David, over 4,000 near-death experiences posted on the website. By far the largest publicly accessible collection of near-death experiences in the world. So now I can say with more conviction and based on far more evidence than ever possible before that near-death experiences are, in a word, real.
Yeah, that's fascinating. We have run out of time, and is there anything quick you want to say either about your foundation or wherever?
whatever you'd like to comment on?
Sure. We encourage people to visit the Near-Death Experience Research Foundation, NDERF.org. We sure encourage people to share their experiences. David, with that many near-death experiences, I'm continuing to investigate them and research them. I'm looking into the spiritual content of near-death experiences in a way that's never been done before. Exciting research coming up. Stay tuned.
Yeah. Hey, this is fantastic. I'll tell you, I could ask you questions for the rest of the afternoon, but unfortunately, we've run out of time. I want to thank you so much, Dr. Long, for being on the show with us. It's fascinating what you're doing, and I could see why you could be in this thing full time and trying to figure out what's going on. It's amazing, and I love the work you're doing.
Well, thank you. Great questions, great interview. And yeah, this is we've really been able to talk a lot about near-death experiences. And I think your listeners are really going to be blessed with some understanding here and the marvel. I mean, even after 4,000 near-death experiences I've read, each one is precious, and I continue to marvel every day when I read them.
Yeah, this is fantastic. Thank you very much. To close the show, I look forward to sharing our thoughts every Friday morning at 9 a.m. here on W4CY.com. Truth is indeed stranger than fiction, and it turns out to be an amazingly good news story. We all have a great destiny ahead of us. Let me leave you with one last thought. You're a unique spirit having life experience. You are far more important in the grander scheme of things than you can possibly realize. Enjoy your life.